It's time for the Max Show. Yes, Ewan's away again, and I'm in the toasting seat once again. Ewan's down again in London somewhere, earning a crust. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing, but he's making some money. Joining me again, we have a wonderful panel. Starting off, who is just frozen on the screen, I can just see, is Alex G. Fox. How are you, sir?
I'm frozen, apparently.
Well, there's two of you on the
screen. Yeah, am I? Yeah, it is a bit freezing, actually. Winter has arrived, finally. It's the middle of October almost, and it's now you might not just get away with a T-shirt weather. It's ridiculous.
And you was out. You was doing stuntman work, weren't you, earlier week? You was on the roof fixing it.
Yeah, I fixed my roof. Here's a bit of a DIY tip. I got a quote for £3,500 to fix the roof. I bought a pot of glue for £11, and it's not leaking anymore. And I've only actually used half of that pot of glue. So there you go, £5.5 to £3,500. So,
oh, cool. You
there's my advice.
Oh, cool. You next time something goes wrong over here. Also joining us,
as long as it's a low roof.
Also joining us, we have the wonderful and talented Miss One Password herself, Kelly Gamont. And I got the name right this time.
Yes, you did. Yay.
How are you,
Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And returning after an extended absence, the internationally beloved technology pundit himself, Mr. Andy Anatko.
Thank you very much. Don't know what I said to get kicked off the show for an extended period of time, but I'm just glad that whenever our lawyers talk to your lawyers and whatever agreements have put into place, I've stuck so far to the show, and I hope that I don't get booted off for another 2 or 3 months. is this related to the fact that Ewan is not doing the show right now?
Okay, well, who knows?
Did I give him some lip or something? Was that did he find out about that thing between me and his sister?
If he didn't have people back on who gave him lip, he'd be sitting there all on his own.
It'd be the Ewan show all the time.
I forgot this is podcasting. What some people call lip, other people call content.
Now, firstly, I'm most impressed you two are working today, unlike your government. So that's quite impressive.
Well, again, we don't work. We are not Congress people. We do have to work for a living. Yeah. We do. There is a connection between the work we do and the pay we get for the work we do, and so we have to actually show up.
Yeah.
Oh, we're a little better.
Unlike Congress.
Well, maybe we're all going to be showing up on October the 22nd because that is the rumored date for the new iPad releases. Now, that's going to work out on a Tuesday. What's that? A week Tuesday, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's unofficial at the moment, but come on, has anyone heard if Mr. Jim Dalrymple himself has said yep or nope?
I thought we'd had an official blessing from the beard. Maybe I'm mistaken.
Wall Street, one of the flags has already gone up. The Wall Street Journal has reported on it. And usually you can't trust necessarily everything they say about an unannounced Apple thing, but they're usually spot on when it comes to the date of an Apple event. Mm-hmm.
That's good. So what are we expecting, apart from obviously iPad? I mean, is there anything left that they can surprise us with? Because we know they're probably going to roll out the Pro. We know we're probably going to get the iPad 5, and it's going to be thinner and lighter. Chances are, if we do get a Mini, hopefully it will come out with a Retina screen. They're probably going to release Mavericks around the same time. Is there anything left for them to surprise us with?
I really don't think so, and I think that this really is a time for them to. I think we're going to see a May Day parade more than a spectacular announcement. You know, where there's the reviewing stand and they roll out the missile launchers that we know they had, and the space launcher that we know they had, and the tanks that they know they had. It's just that when you put them all together, and Apple has a chance to say, and here's why, by putting this new CPU in this MacBook, it's not just a faster CPU. By interacting with Mavericks, with all of this new power management features, and blah blah blah, and with iWorks in the cloud, blah blah blah, and see what a happy, harmonious platform and operating system family that constellation we have right now. So you're right. I mean, I'll be interested to see if we actually do see a Retina iPad Mini. I don't think that's a lock yet, but and also Apple's not feeling any pressure to put that in. So I think that's always been a case of whereas Google absolutely had to have Retina on their Nexus 7 tablet, and Amazon absolutely had to have a Retina display on their Mini. Apple is selling more iPad Minis than anything else they've got right now. Excuse me, it's outselling the regular iPad. So they know that unless we can get the battery life we want, unless we can get the quality we want, and also unless the manufacturing can actually turn these things out with an acceptable rate of acceptance, we can hold off for another quarter before you release that. So the answer is that I really don't know exactly what's going on. I think all the things you mentioned are definitely on the table, but we're not going to know until we actually see.
So if they haven't gone with a Retina iPad, you don't reckon we're going to see that at all? iPad Mini that is, of course.
I really don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. they can get by without it. They mm-hmm. certainly there's nothing stopping them from putting that new A7 chip in everything. Because one of the huge advantages of the speed at which Apple sells hardware, and also how well they manage that supply chain, is that they can make a change. They never have like a several month backlog of hardware to blow through. They can always put in a change, and then 2 weeks later you're seeing new hardware actually in stores now. So if they have a hot new CPU, I don't think there's anything stopping them from putting that into the new line. I don't, especially a consumer oriented product like the iPad Mini. The regular iPad, it's a great piece of hardware. I use it as my day-to-day computer when I'm outside of the office. But it's the iPad Mini that people are going to be surprising each other with on Christmas and Hanukkah, the other holidays. So they really are going to want to be able to say, here's something new, here's something fresh, here's something wonderful. And there's no reason for them not to do it, so they're going to do it. Again, I'm leaning towards, yes, you'd see Retina, because it's getting to be a little bit embarrassing. And also, iOS 7 doesn't look great in non-Retina, and when you think about it, the only iOS 7 compatible device available today that is a non-Retina display is the iPad Mini. So that's got a big green glowing target on it for elimination soon.
Indeed. Kelly, do you reckon we're going to see Touch ID in these new devices, or is it just going to be still for the phone only?
I think for now it's going to be phone only, but I also think that I'm with Andy on the iPad Mini going Retina. I think they'll probably A7. Well, I think what they'll do is they'll A7 the Mini. I think what they might do with the full-size iPad is put the 5S chip in it. It's really early. I could be saying that they're going to put the same thing in the same thing, but I feel like they're going to have to do something to give the full-size iPad more appeal. Because, like Andy said, the Mini is ridiculously popular, Retina or no Retina. And I think that maybe that's the thing that they're going to do to sort of differentiate, like they did on the iPhone line, where you've got the 64-bit in the high-end model, and then you've got the really nice processor and really nice screen in the littler one. So I think that might be what they do. I think if they're going to make it appealing for people to upgrade on the full-size end, they're going to have to do something special like the 64-bit or the Touch ID or something where maybe a larger capacity, things like that. I will drink more coffee before you come back to the next question. I'm not quite with it yet. But I think we're going to get, if we don't already know them by that point, I think we're going to get the date for Mavericks. It'll probably be the next day. And I have to tell you, one of the funny things about knowing a lot of developers is that when people used to talk about the pre-release operating systems, they'd put redacted in these brackets. And then with Lion and with Mountain Lion, they would put roar-dacted in the brackets. And then now, because it's Mavericks, everybody's been putting Tom Cruise in the brackets. And so it's been kind of funny to watch people have these conversations about Tom Cruise and how Tom Cruise is treating their computers. So I think we may get a little nudge of something, like a little bump of an update to maybe the Apple TV software. They may announce another content deal with a couple extra channels or something. I think we will get something outside of what we presume to know to be the case, which is the iPad stuff. And I think they'll probably talk a little bit about, have you heard we have a new phone, and have you heard how awesome everybody thinks it is? I think we'll get a little bit of that too.
And they're going to show off those sales figures, probably, as well.
Oh yeah, that's the first. I think the first 10 minutes of almost every keynote they do is all about developers of the keynote software are developing new 3D stat graph tools, and we decided we're going to preview them to you without announcing them by showing you how well the Shanghai store is doing right now.
Alex, do you reckon? Do you see anything they can announce that'll be unexpected?
Well, I think that's a thing of the past. I think if you look at all the LMUG meetings and how many times we've sat there in a row now and gone, oh, okay. Yeah, but we knew that. Yeah, we knew that. And we've sort of bemoaned the days of, you know, the one more thing and something exciting. But Apple now, I mean, not that they weren't big before, but their production lines are so massive now and they're spread so globally that there is no way they can really keep anything secret in the way they used to. So I think we've got to get used to the fact that, you know, an Apple release keynote is not what it used to be, and it probably never will be again. They're far too large and far too spread out.
I don't know about that. They've I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're posting.
No, please, go ahead, everyone.
All I was going to say is they did manage to keep some things, some stuff that they were totally in charge of this time. They kept that secret. All the parts get leaked out and subcontracted out. They can't keep them secret. But no one really had they was going to have an M7 chip in there, for example. No one really knew it was going to be 64-bit when they announced that, which is all the stuff that sort of...
Yeah, I mean, if you forgive me for saying it, it feels like you're sort of clinging on a bit. Because in the old days, they could bring out a whole line of something, and you'd gone, well, I never saw that
coming.
True, very nice. Now, they had the Mac Pro, the new Mac Pro, and we were all, wow, it's round. Well, we had an inkling, but it was big and it was new. But that was pre-full production, and it was based in America. So it was something that they could keep a lot more locked down. The big things that you're sort of used to them releasing, I don't think they're going to be able to hold things as secretly as they used to be. Mm-hmm. And as for you, you know, you mentioned the touch on the iPad. I was been thinking about that, and I was thinking, as a business tool, it makes sense. But as a, I don't know what people use the iPads for, but I think, I don't know what the majority of them are, but enough people use them around the house. And whereas a phone is an individual thing, you know, because it's your number, someone's going to ring you on that phone, it makes sense to lock it down quite tightly to you. But something like an iPad is a more shared around thing. So having that on an actual iPad, you know, the logging yourself in. I mean, you know, you come around to my house, there's an iPad there, you pick it up, you use it. You know, oh, can I just surf the net? Or can I do this?
And I see what's
it's
on
more
it,
of a shared device. Exactly. But it's a shared device, whereas a phone, unless someone steals it out of your pocket in the pub and sends tweets under your account,
yeah, you do that,
it's normally
Alex.
Not yes, it's not normally something that you share around. So I think the, you know, all that touch thing, I don't think it's as necessary in an iPad. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But one thing I just want to say is that I think that it's unusual that we're seeing such fine-grained leaks. And most of the leaks, though, aren't coming necessarily from the supply chain, but knowing that, well, Apple has just bought this fingerprint authentication company, and they're certainly pointing that towards something that's coming soon. But even the hugest product announcements that Apple has done, the iPad was not a secret up until about 2 months before the release, excuse me, its announcement. The iPhone also, everybody knew. This was like when I was in attendance for the iPhone keynote, the introduction of the iPhone. It was like knowing that the Beatles were going to 1977, and the Beatles are reforming to just play in 4 gigs unannounced. The announcement had people, the news had gone out, they knew that I knew where it was going to be, and they were trying to have me get them into this keynote because they knew the iPhone was going to be announced and shown off. The only reason why we had such thin, specific information on it was because they were doing that trick where here's the date in which we have to file with the FCC for regulation of these devices in the U.S., and so we're not going to be releasing it in January, but we're going to announce it in January, and then in 4 months' time, after things start getting ramped up, we're going to start doing stuff like that. But the thing that none of us have all of us have forgotten is that isn't it easy to forget that they do sell these things called iPods that you can actually go into a store and ask, do you still have such a thing as an iPod, and
very
can
true.
I give you money in exchange for one of them? I forget which site it was. It might have been 9to5Mac, made a very shrewd observation that Apple had quietly introduced a new color for a couple of the different iPods, and suggested that, well, the fact that they weren't that they were doing this just simply as no announcement, it just happens to appear on the price list now, means that they have no intention of introducing new iPods this year. And there's no buzz about it. There's no thoughts about it. I'd be very curious. I'd be very interested to see if they even do anything with the iPod Touch to upgrade the CPU or do anything like that. It does seem as though this is the fading years for the iPod.
Well, remember that a couple years ago, Andy, you may be able to help me with how far back it went, but October used to be the iPod event. That was what we had. We would sit and we would wait, and, well, October, new iPods, that's what we're going to get. And they continued that even after introducing the iPhone, and then all of a sudden we went the year and a half between, so it was January and they didn't announce a new iPhone, and everybody waited and waited and waited, and then it was summer and we were supposed to have new phones and didn't have them and waited and waited and waited, and then all of a sudden they had this event in October and went, bam, iPhone. And so that now that's what it's become. They've sort of co-opted the iPod event to become the iPhone event. And then, of course, last year, the co-opted iPod event, they announced the new iPhones and new iPads. So, you know, people are always like, oh, Apple always. No, sweetie, no.
Yeah. Last year was really weird because they actually announced the third generation and the fourth generation in the same year.
Right.
Because you're right. I mean, we used to be able to sort of plan that in spring they're going to announce the new iPad, in summer they're going to announce the new iPhone during WWDC, and September and October they're going to announce the stocking stuffer, you know, $50, $100, and $150 iPods. And there's probably going to be new or refreshed notebooks in April or May because that's the last chance for schools and whatever to make their bulk purchases for the upcoming school year. Now it really is like they can announce anything at any time for any reason. And it's like, great, so I used to be able to just block off some time to – I used to be able to say literally – you're probably the same way. Like truly, I would be able to say, oh, I don't have time to if I'm in San Francisco for a meeting like in whatever, like February, I will say, oh, well, you know, actually I'm kind of busy and I'm really, really tired, but I'm definitely going to be back in 2 months for this event, so why don't we get together then? I'm sorry, it looks like that event isn't happening, and I'm sorry that I decided to sleep in my hotel room on Tuesday morning instead of having breakfast with you. No offense means, sir, I'm sorry.
Well, of course, the trouble was...
Okay.
All the other tech companies out there saw there was a pattern forming for Apple's releases, so they could rush out their product ahead of what they suspected would be an Apple launch and grab the headlines, because they once it had gone, like, been announced, that all those headlines had just taken over by Apple, rightly or wrongly. So it seemed to me that by shaking up their release schedule, it made a harder job for all the other tech companies to sort of get their products out there at a specific time and be Apple to the punch, so to speak. Go on, Alex, what was she saying? Trying to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, the only other thing that could be released, and well, it is a form of release, is with the new chips in, I suppose it must be the new iPhone, with all that the extra sensors that are in there, if they are going to release iPads and things like that, which have got the same chipsets, you could have some third-party releases, you know, like the old Nike Fuel Band, that sort of thing, which are designed in partnership with Apple to make the most of these new bits and pieces that are available to them, you know, the new gyroscopes and that sort of thing. So there could be new releases. They could introduce, I don't know, whoever the company is, say Nike, for instance, and they could introduce them with a new trainer that talks to your phone or so, because it's all in there now. The reason those things are in there is because they're going to be used at a later date, and I don't think Apple are going to be the one that's going to produce the, you know, I don't know if they're going to produce the wristwatch, but whatever, they're not going to be the first ones to produce what's going to talk to these new bits on the chipsets. So I think that might be something you get, something that you weren't expecting, but it won't be coming from Apple. It'll be released in conjunction with Apple.
Yeah, that's if there's something unexpected and cool that I'm expecting from the October 22nd event, it really is the third-party companies are invited up on stage and given 3 or 4 minutes, particularly with the Mac Pro. I think that we're going to see, you know, and we decided when we gave the Mac Pro to a couple of key partners to see what they would do with it, and now bring on the stage, they'll show a game that is just ungodly good. They'll show some sort of video editor, I think, that will do things like can do a special effect in real time that would have taken like at least a day's worth of processing, those kind of things, because the Mac Pro is it's a cool enough design to put into a trailer that runs in movie theaters, but I think what they really want to show off is here's what this speed is going to enable. Here's the sort of stuff that other developers have been putting on the back burner for 5 years because they realize that, well, there's no way in hell we can ever do this in real time. So good idea, but maybe someday. And then,
and now here's John Lasseter.
Exactly.
I know Ewan's hoping for a backpack to come out so he can buy it and stick it in his backpack and take it everywhere he goes.
That's he can play Rocketeer, have two of them.
Yeah, there you go. I think game controller. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, maybe. No, I was going to say, I seem to remember Apple do have a slight connection with maybe a movie company that might need to use very high-powered animation machines. I don't know, somewhere in the back of my mind I remember that.
Well, I think the game controller would be cool. What do you guys think? Do you think if even though it's, you know, as we keep referring to it as the iPad event, do you think they're going to be like, hey, remember we told you about all that awesome stuff we packed into the new phones? Here's what people are doing with it?
There was that leaked photo of a Logitech controller a little while ago, and people was in the comments were saying, oh, it's ugly, it looks disgusting, but I thought it looked really cool. And if I can just clip my iPhone in and have a built-in pad, so to speak, I'll be playing games for a lot longer, because, you know, the screens, touch screen stuff's all very well and good, but to have actual physical buttons and controllers that you can have access to, I just think that'll blow away the handheld competition.
The obvious way forward, because of, you know, it's not until the iPhone, the iPad made game playing really useful on a Mac device. Before that, people weren't even bothering to make the games. You had things on the iPhone, but the phone wasn't really powerful enough at the time when they started. So it's the obvious thing to try and take over that. What I'd really like Apple to do, and I don't know if they do it at this launch, is they had iMessage, they had iChat, and then they got Messages, then they got FaceTime. I'd like them to build something that would be Skype-esque, and you'll be able to jump into it from other devices, even if you're not on Apple. And then they can build something which is like a Google Hangout, funnily enough, or a Skype, but something that's going to link it all together, because that's something their platform is missing, because it's only Apple talking to Apple. Yeah. I think that might be something they really, really should look into.
I think they are going to have to address that, because it was when they introduced FaceTime, that was an era in which if somebody had a high-powered smartphone, at least in the United States, it would be likely to be an iPhone, because Android the hardware companies and Google themselves did not have their act together to produce a product that was as capable as the iPhone. Now, with that, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, I just think that it's a fact, the iPhone is just simply one high-powered smartphone among many that are on the market, and many others have different features that are speaking to people in the same way that the iPhone signature features are speaking to them. So if Apple wants to, right now FaceTime looks less like, well, here is one of the wonderful reasons why you should have an iPhone. Now FaceTime is starting to look like, oh, but I can't talk to my mom. Well, my mom doesn't have an iPhone. Okay, well, Google Hangouts works? Okay, great. Yeah. We'll work with Google Hangouts. So I think that's something they're going to have to start addressing soon.
Well, and the other reason they have to address that is because they said FaceTime was an open standard. When they came out with it, they were like, FaceTime is open, but there's no, there is zero documentation about it on the site. There's absolutely nothing that indicates it.
I was looking into that a few weeks ago, and I don't take this as canon, but there are there might be a couple other reasons why that was held up, including a patent attack that basically allowed that they weren't able to open source this because they would be open. Excuse me, I'm sorry. They weren't allowed to open up the standard because they would have to open up things that they either don't own or don't have a license to open. So that's something I was not aware of until about a month ago. So I'm still shagging that down, but because that is an embarrassing. If Steve Jobs says that, and this is something we can do and we're going to do, and when that doesn't happen, they need to explain why that didn't happen.
Yes, and I've heard a number of people trying to, you know, so what's the deal with that? They said it was open, didn't they? Yeah.
But there's a number. It's the way Apple goes, though, isn't it? Like iBeacons as well. We've not really heard much about iBeacons being opened up to everyone. And yeah, iMessage as well.
Yeah, that's another concern, too. I mean, there's so much of the really cool everybody's justifiably a little bit nose out of joint about a lot of the changes that have been made in iOS 7. But the coolest things are not the things that Apple was demonstrating during WWDC. I think the coolest things are things that were in that one big slide with a million like different buzz phrases of different size type. And game controllers was one of them. Another one is these iBeacons things, which is wonderful, but it's the same thing with FaceTime. If it's a wonderful thing to be able to have precise location awareness for your phone based on an extremely low-power Bluetooth device that can be powered for months on a button cell battery, but it's no good if you still need to be a member of the iPhone Club in order to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So I'd be really keen to know how third-party developers and how infrastructure developers are responding to that. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be great, and I'd be surprised if Apple is not going to do this, they make so many different devices that are static devices in the home. Wouldn't it be great if every Apple TV were also an iBeacon so that as I set up my phone for different behavior, it will know that it's inside the living room or it would know that it's inside my bedroom or inside my office. And I got that stuff for free only by virtue of the fact that I also think that having an Apple TV is a cool idea.
I love my Apple TV. And I'd love for it to become an iBeacon as well as a secondary device.
That would be awesome. Like if my phone is on the same network, maybe I don't need to enter the passcode. You know, like that's a thing that people have. There's a jailbreak that lets you do that. Like if you're connect, you assign your home Wi-Fi network, and as long as you're on your own Wi-Fi network at your house, you don't have to enter your passcode.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's so much cool things, so many cool enhancements that Apple could do to the iPhone that affect awareness of context, awareness of location, that would speak immediately to users. I mean, I'm using, it's no secret that I use an Android phone as my main phone, and there's so many ways that really expresses itself to me. It's set up right now, and it was not difficult at all to set up, so that whenever it's connected to my car Bluetooth, the fact that it's aware that, oh, you're connected to car Bluetooth, well, I bet this means you don't need Wi-Fi. I bet this means you want to use this different application launcher that's easier to use, like so you don't get distracted. I bet you also want these apps to be running and active and loaded. All this sort of stuff that happened just by virtue of the fact that all I did was press a button on my car console that says, please connect to my phone. And so those are things I'd love to see the iPhone do. And it can do. And Apple did a great job with fingerprint authentication. It's the first device I've ever used where it's useful enough that you will actually not turn the feature off in frustration after 4 days. And so this would be I think they're one of the only companies that could do location awareness in exactly that way where, hey, you're in the kitchen, so I'm going to automatically make sure that you're connected to your AirPlay speakers that are connected up in this kitchen right here. I'm also going to not waste batteries searching for Wi-Fi because I'm going to trust that the Wi-Fi base station that's 10 feet away that you always ask me to use is in fact the base station you want me to use. All this cool stuff that you could be doing.
Now, Bell's in the chat room says iBeacons is using part of the Bluetooth LTE spec, and not just Apple only. So hopefully it's not that far reached that they might open up a lot quicker than they've opened up stuff in the past.
Yeah. All the hardware is there, but it's still the how does this device communicate with that? How does it set things? It's so.
Did you say something, Alex?
I was going to say, one of the things Apple could use iBeacon for, and I mean, it's only because I have issues at home, but so many people do. I spoke a long time ago about a To-Go app, which is something that O2 use. And it's basically, if you've got lousy 3G or normal cellular reception, it switches you over to Wi-Fi and you go through your home network. Now, using iBeacon, it would make great sense. Because you've got your FaceTime, you've already got that platform and all the various other things, and you can be connected, your phone can be connected to via your telephone number, but not via your cellular device in case if it's dropped out for whatever reason. iBeacon would be wonderful for that, because I'd love to walk into my house. My cellular network drops off because I have to have various boosters that put me through the internet as it is to make a phone call in my own home. But if that was an iBeacon built into the iPhone, that as soon as I got within the range of my house. It tested, is the cellular network lousy? Is the Wi-Fi net? And it automatically switched me over. So once I go within that place, I know I'm still going to be able to get a telephone call. And it would make so much more sense is if you used iBeacon and Apple software to do that for you. It's just one of the things that would be very, very useful. The technology is there. They just don't seem to put the two things together, and I don't know why.
Yeah. Mm. Now, let's move on to something else, shall we? Kelly, did you get your iPhone in the end?
I did.
What one did you get?
I got the Hoth phone.
The white one, not the silver one.
Yes. Hey, look, it's you.
Okay. See, I went for the classic. I went for the gold.
Yes.
I did that. Now, have you had an issue? Because there are some reports out about the 5S crashing and having, of all things, a blue screen of death. Now, I can replicate this on my phone exactly the way they told me. Apparently, if you in the past week, there have been numerous reports of apparent issue with Apple's iWork productivity suite running on the 5S. Folks have been having issues with their top-end phone abruptly restarting each time they fired up Apple Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, for example. Now, if I fire up Pages and I edit a document, then when I shut it down and go back into it, my phone just locks up and I have to restart the phone, which is quite annoying.
I don't use any of those, that's probably why I haven't had trouble.
There might be more to do with the quality of your writing.
Shut up. No, I've had it as well on the iPad under iOS 7. Sometimes when I'm using Tweetbot, it just crashes on me for some unknown reason. And there's also been a number of reports about iMessage having some bugs in a previous week where
a few bugs.
What? No.
Well, you send a message and it doesn't go through, or it appears to go through, but then after about an hour or so, you get the little red symbol saying, no, sorry, I didn't send that after all.
I've seen iMessage have a seizure. My mother-in-law's iPad ran into this, but I haven't seen anyone else.
Nightmare.
I personally haven't seen it from anywhere else. I've heard people mention it, and I've given them the two things that can fix it in the meantime. The first was how I fixed it on my mother-in-law's iPad, which is the IT Crowd solution. I turned it off and turned it on again, and then it was happy, so I quit caring. But really, I mean, iMessage is having trouble. This here's my shocked face. So,
Alex, the turning it on and off works for a few minutes. It's been a real pig. I've had people say, why didn't you turn up? I was like, well, because you didn't ask me to. Yes, I did. I sent you a message. No, you didn't. And they look at their phone, and they've got the message, and they go, yeah, look. And I went, yeah, do you see that little red dot? And they go, what? Yeah, what's that mean? And so I press it, and it says, try again or send us a text message. Yeah. So everyone that I speak to, I say, can you please just turn iMessage off and send me text messages? Please stop with this iMessage. It's been a real, real problem. I mean, a couple of times I've just not been where I'm supposed to be because people rely on it. I mean, yes, but... I mean, someone said, well, you know, I spoke to someone else and they were a little bit too much of a fanboy. They said, well, you know, you shouldn't rely on it. I'm like, well, yeah, I should. Because it's a service when you send someone a message, I mean, if you send someone a text message and it doesn't go through, you know it hasn't gone through. The iMessage tricks you into thinking it's gone through, or it just hangs there with that little blue line, which is 3/4 of the way through. And you just think, because the writing is still on the screen, you think it's gone. Mm-hmm. And I just said, please turn off iMessage. Just turn it off. It's actually costing me money. Turn the damn thing off.
There are people who do have this issue, who do have like legitimate concerns, like Alex does. The understanding I have is that iOS 7.03, that update is going to resolve it. If you need to resolve it now, turn it off, reboot your phone, and turn it on. Sometimes helps short term, like Alex was saying. The other thing you can do is go to the settings app and forget network settings and then reboot and then turn it off, forget network settings, reboot, and then turn messages back on. And that seems to be a longer term fix for some people, as in like it might work
exactly.
for a week
it's a longer
or so
term,
instead
it's
of.
It's not permanent.
It's still not permanent for most people, but at least it's something that you can do in the short term. So if anybody listening is having that problem, at least now that you may have at least an option until 7.03 drops.
Yeah.
But so do we think Apple should be making more of a point of notifying us as users of bugs?
I think this is absolutely this is the worst thing they could have done. They should have just come out and go, look, it's unlike us. I mean, so many things that they put out and don't work that well, they say it's in beta, or beta, as we say properly. And that's what they say. And we have to accept that it's not going to work that well because it's not their finished product, but they've got their excuse in early, and that's fine. iMessage is fundamental. They should have said, I know we've just put out 7.01 after 2 days. I don't even remember what they did. But I think 7.02 or whatever it is to fix it should have been out. It should be an absolute priority. They should put their hands up and say, look, we're really sorry. We dropped the ball and we're going to fix this because it is so important. Mm-hmm. It's almost as important as being able to make a phone call. And to a lot of people, it's more important. So I think they should have put their hands up and said, we've messed up here. Really sorry. Download the fix. It's ready. And just do it.
I get the impression that I really... They would never do this, but conceptually, I would love to see Apple spend an entire year saying that we've got the iPad on its feet, great. The iPhone is where we want it to be, that's great. We finally updated iOS to a brand new version, ditto for Mac OS. We are telling you right now and right here, we're going to spend 2014 not doing anything titanically different. We're just going to turn all of our attention to all the things that we clearly have been ignoring in our rush to get these bigger projects out. Because you always hear about how they're pulling engineers off of one project to staff up for iOS 7 or for Mavericks or for whatever make or break announcement that's coming up in 2 or 3 months. And in the meantime, apps like iMessage are... they're good enough. Okay, we're not going to have to really address this. Mail, which has always had huge shortcomings, has never gotten that sort of floor-to-ceiling, wall-to-wall cleanup that it's desperately needed. I mean, you talk about messages costing you money. Mail screwed up so royally for me a couple weeks ago. It almost cost me, I'm no joke, like $10,000-$15,000. Because there was an invoice that needed to be filed by a certain deadline, so I beat the deadline by 3 or 4 days. Mail, unfortunately, and this is not a bug, this is what it believes to be the right thing to do. I had a minor problem with my ISP. It thought that I was sending spam, and so it cut off my outgoing mail. Easy problem for me to solve as soon as I'm aware of it. Mail was unable to send mail for 2 days, and rather than put up, boom, big boxing, hi, yeah. I can't send this email. This is a big problem. It just sort of, oh, well, I'll just put it in the outbox. Don't worry, it'll be solved. And I didn't find out about it until someone said, yeah, you realize that if you don't file this invoice in 2 days, that I can't write, there's almost nothing we can do about it. And that's when I found dozens and dozens and dozens of emails that had not been sent.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, really? This is really your solution to saying, oh, don't worry. I'm sure that at some point people will ask Andy, hey, how come that this column you promised to send us first thing Monday isn't here and it's Wednesday night? Like, oh, really? That's what I'm talking about. I think that there should almost be a new Apple division, and this would be a good springboard for a primetime series. Like sort of cold case squad for Mac and iOS software, saying that this has not been paid attention to. You are the squad. This job, we are not going to give you interference. We're not going to make you we're not going to give you a new mandate in the middle of it. Say, oh, well, you have to make this compatible with whatever. Saying you've got 3 months to do everything you could ever want to do to improve or fix mail. You have an unlimited snack budget. Go to it. Good luck and Godspeed.
CSI Cupertino.
But that's the point, though. Apple, I mean, I don't know if there's too few coders on the planet or something. I get the impression there isn't. Now, Apple can't say, well, we can't afford to bring people in, right? There is no excuse. They own the planet. That's what they do. So why do they need to be pulling one person off of one division to work on another division? Are they fundamentally understaffed? I mean, what is the problem? When you've got that much money and that big a turnover, you really don't have to cut things to the bone. You don't need to have just the right amount of employees. Maybe have a few extras floating around just so you don't have to be understaffed on a certain department. I can't believe that there's a legitimate excuse for Apple that they haven't got enough staff to work on things, because I think there's probably a few people out there that might take a job if it was offered to them.
I also wonder how they get away with it so often, because we sort of know these problems exist, but we just sort of, okay, yeah, that's a thing you have to deal with. But no other aspects of the whole Apple ecosphere, like, they pay such close attention to details, and yet there's these big glaring omissions which just seem to be accepted, which is weird to me.
Yeah,
I think every ecosystem has that, though. I mean, I'm sure there's Android people that, like, you know, can you take a screenshot of that and send it to me? And they're like, oh, I can't, because da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, I think there's those things in everything. I think the list is just shorter with Apple in some ways. But I would really like to see Andy's 2014,
yeah, but Apple are trying
all
to
we
be...
do is tighten bolts.
Yeah, but Apple are supposed to be the definitive company. You know, they are supposed to be. They are supposed to be the high end. And for, you know, for Android to drop the ball, we'd be going, well, we're hardly surprised, are we? And if Microsoft have to bring out 1,000 patches for something, we're like, well, that's what Microsoft do. But Apple, I mean, maybe it's their own success that's caused themselves the problem. But Apple, we're supposed to go, no, no, you buy an Apple because it works. When I first moved over to Apple, people said, why did you do it? And I said, because it just works. And then a year later, they used that in their advert, and I was really annoyed that I never got any money for that. But that's how I believed it. That was my perception. I'd had so many years of having to sod around with Windows machines that I just bought the bullet, pay for everything I'd ever paid for on Microsoft, and paid Adobe again and all the rest of it. I did all that because it just worked. The amount of trouble I've had in the last couple of years with my iMacs is incredible. I've actually used Windows from time to time because I can't be bothered to fix the Apple machine. And things have changed. Is this a Steve isn't there kicking people up the butt so often type thing? Are people maybe, I'm not saying they're slacking, but has the ethos changed just a bit slightly? Maybe they're not absolutely terrified that they used to be. But somebody needs to be kicking a few butts because of... they're still better than most other companies, but I don't think they're as good as they used to be. So maybe they need someone running around cracking a whip and going, look, you know, walking around with a picture of Steve Jobs and say, remember him, remember him, remember the ethos, remember that we didn't put anything out there because we were scared to hell that if it went wrong, we'd be shouted at in a way that was highly inappropriate. Maybe they need a little bit more of that, because to me, things are... they're not slipping dramatically, and no, they're not going down the pan, but this is a conversation, this type of conversation is happening more and more. And if it's happening more and more, and they've got the resources to do something about it, then they should be.
Yeah. I think that's mostly just a problem of scale now. They're no longer a company that makes a line of... I'm looking for a more positive word than marginal. I'm saying that they were a maker of a line of computers that were much beloved and very important to the people who use them, but not necessarily important to the industry as a whole. And now they are the definitive. They're one of the definitive makers of phones. They are right now. If we look at define a tablet as something that is used as a computer and not simply as a book reader, they're probably almost certainly the definitive tablet maker in the world. They are the definitive online store in the world. So they perhaps their structure is no longer able to support it, that all their products as well as they were able to do 5 or 10 years in the past. But I think that most of it, it's that Apple has always prided itself on messaging the quality that they're selling. That there's a reason why this laptop that they're selling costs $1,300, even though the same laptop with the same features that runs Windows will cost $400 less from a different manufacturer. And they will say, well, here's how we control the entire widget. We really put our full passion into every single detail. And also, as Apple fans, we've also sort of supported this by, again, being the people who say, I use this device because it just works, because there's a form, fit, finish, and function to it that is absolutely predictable and absolutely what I'm looking for. But we tend to ignore the fact that they are still just a tech company that is, has to deal with whatever resources that they have to throw at a problem that can has to choose priorities that are not necessarily always going to be in line with our priorities, and that they can fail just as well as any other big company. And even when Steve Jobs was at the reins, remember, you know, Mobile Me. And remember, you know, they had their failures too. This was also the company that made the iPod Hi-Fi, and iPod Socks and stuff like that. And there were apps that didn't really work very well. There were services that didn't work very well. So I think that this is a very positive thing. That if we start, I've always said that I think that the reason why I use an iPad is because it's the best device that's out there. I legitimately love this device. And I think that it is. There is absolutely no rose-colored glasses that I'm looking through at this thing. Apple has earned every single accolade and every single bit of praise I've put upon this device. And I think that it's good if, as a culture of people who use Apple products, we are not identifying ourselves as this is the cool company. We like the logo. We love the statements they make. We love what we believe we stand for. I continue to use a Mac because it is the best computer out there, and it's not perfect, and I'm aware of its imperfections, but I've made a conscious and non-emotional decision that this is legitimately the greatest computer and the greatest operating system you can get.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the point. You used the right word. It's a non-emotional... Yeah, but the thing is, it's a non-emotional decision, which is perfect. The bit I can't understand is when people throw so much emotion into a company that is just a supplier of goods. You know, they could be supplying widgets. It doesn't matter what they're supplying, but that's where it goes wrong. It goes wrong. I mean, I'm making these comments about Apple, and I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder how much abuse I'm going to get through Twitter for that.
And it just, but I'm going to abuse you now, it's absolute and nonsense. I'm going to tell you why. No. Because here we go. You ready?
Here we go. Go for it.
So, if it weren't for Apple, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about them. We wouldn't know each other. We wouldn't have any interaction.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? If it weren't for Google, we wouldn't be sitting here talking to each other.
Okay, that's true. weren't for Google, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Apple.
He shoots, he scores.
I'm sorry.
Oh, good. Okay.
I suppose we could be using Microsoft products instead.
There's like a control panel in front of me, and the bastard light starts flashing, saying, push it, push this button, look.
I was just having this conversation on the Tua Talkcast because we were talking about 2 years ago when Steve passed away. I was working at an event where Mike Rose from Tua, his day job managed to intersect with all the Tua stuff because he has a whole other thing that he does. So at the time, he needed people as a Genius Bar for an iPad deployment to a whole bunch of salespeople for this pharmaceutical company. And so he went, who do I know that would be willing to spend a week in Orlando and work ridiculous hours on iPads all the live long day? And I was like the first person he called. So me and Dave Kalo manned the Genius Bar at this pharmaceutical company iPad deployment event for like a ton of salespeople. So hundreds and hundreds of people are walking around with these things. We get the iPhone event, and then 2 days later, Steve passes away. But we're all standing there, and I remember at the end of the iPhone event in October, we were standing around, and I was like, you know, like, I'm standing in Orlando because of Apple. I'm standing in Orlando with friends of mine because of Apple. I get to spend, you know, all this time supporting something and, like, you know, making money off of this thing that I'm doing because of Apple. And I have all these friends, and I get the opportunity to do all these things and go all these places and meet all these people and do awesome stuff because of Apple. Like, for me, it's a very, very straight line. Andy probably feels similarly. So to me, it's always going to be emotional because I have a whole lot of the friends that I have, a whole lot of the contacts that are stored in my little Apple device back there are people I know because of my computer or people I know because of my phone. And that's really important to me, and that's something that, for me, that's why it's emotional. Using the computer is not the emotional piece. Using my phone is not the emotional piece unless I get really mad at something. What was the one that was frustrating me the other day? I don't remember now, but anyway... those are the things that really matter to me. That's really, to me, that's important. That's a big deal. And so, yeah, like, I do have an emotional connection to Apple, and I'm I'm totally going to own it because I don't really have an option. But it's not because, like, I feel like I need to go throw flowers in the road like the girl in the beginning of that Bullwinkle bit, you know. Like, it's not that just because I get to use my computer. I love my computer, but my computer is a by and large utilitarian piece of equipment. It just so happens to be how I get to talk to all of you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the lifestyle.
But remember it started, well, not started, but remember it was the other way around to start off with, though. The emotional, Apple existed, or Apple succeeded, because of the people like you in the first place. Before they became this great big behemoth, which I know is Carl's favourite word of the week, before they became that thing that was self-supporting, they were supported by the likes mm-hmm. of you. So the emotional success wasn't you getting it from them. It wasn't because of Apple you met those people. Remember, Apple, to a large degree, exists because of people like you in the first place. So basically what I'm saying is that don't think you owe Apple, because I personally feel Apple owes people as much as people owe Apple, because of they balanced each other off. Maybe Apple are paying back all that emotional, all that time and all that commitment people gave them through the bad years. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It owes you as much as you owe it.
Absolutely. And now we're going to turn to our public service announcement part of the show. Because uh-oh. Apparently we have back in the phishing scams are back again, and confirm your Apple account scams are out there. It would appear the old phishing scam is making the rounds again, since we now have so much information in our iTunes accounts. They are very tempting prizes for all the naughty boys and girls out there. Always be on the lookout for these emails that allege claiming they're from Apple and saying that you are missing account details on your account, and they obviously send you to our website, which is a link in the email, and it just wants you to put in your username, password, date of birth, or some other security question maybe. Don't fall for them. Now, I'm sure I don't have to tell any of this audience watching or listening to this, but you need to share this out, because apparently when every time Apple releases a new product or a new service, they jump on the back of this, because people do get random emails from Apple saying, oh, look, you've just activated a new device. Is this okay? And all these other details. So be on the lookout for these scams that are on the increase once again.
And the reason we have to pass it on is because the people that a lot of our audience is tech support for the fam. So, you know, mom calls you and says, I got this weird email from Apple. What's going on? Be aware that there's another round of fakery that's running rampant out there. And the other thing that you can do is try on your device. Now you don't need a password for updates anymore, so using updates as a good mechanism for is my account legit isn't the best way to do it anymore, because you don't have to enter a password or anything if you do that. But go look on the front page of the App Store. You can find something that's free and tap on it, and if you enter your password and it works for you, then you're good. So if the email is giving you any consideration at all, then giving you trouble, like if you think maybe it's not right, you can do that. Yes.
If you go to your settings on something like your phone and turn off Find My Phone, and then when you put it back on again, it normally asks you for a password to check that you want it to be put back on again.
That's true, it does.
So try something like Find My iPhone or Find My iPad. That might do it for you.
There you go. That's our public service announcement.
Also, daylight savings time is beginning or ending or whatever the hell it does.
Don't confuse me with that one.
Smoke detectors.
Let's do a Balmer story, shall we? Because what the hell?
Okay.
Office for iPhone was released back in June, but with limited functionality and the absence of an iPad version. However, now outgoing Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer has said iPad will be picked up when there's a touch-first user interface. So he's now confirmed that eventually Office is going to come to the iPad. Now, is this too late, do we reckon?
I wouldn't say so. This is because remember that as great as the iPad is, it's still being thought of, really all tablets right now are being thought of as content consumption devices. It is the device, a great device for browsing the web, a great device for reading books and watching movies. It's not being thought of. You don't see a lot of people walking to a store saying for a laptop and coming out with an iPad, even though it's for most people it's a superior choice. And I've always wondered what would happen when the one of the Microsoft Office, for all of its faults, this is the grease for the gears of business. Mm-hmm. And once you have a really good touch interface for real Microsoft Office, not a hacked down web version, but real Microsoft Office, and now that you have a world in which Microsoft will sell this for the Android 10-inch tablets, and they'll sell it for the Google 7-inch tablets, and they'll sell it for the Apple 9.7-inch tablet, how will that affect people's buying choice? If they're buying this as a device that will let them do PowerPoint presentations when they travel without taking their whole the whole smash with them, will that affect whether they're will that affect them going to the big box store and saying, well, this both of these computers run the Kindle app, both these computers run a good browser, both these computers run can play movies, both these computers have Microsoft Office. They both look like they're built really well. This one costs $350. This one costs $500. I think I'll save $150 and maybe get this Android tablet, or God forbid, this Microsoft Surface RT tablet instead. Right now we've seen only one really multi-touch Microsoft Office app, and that's OneNote. OneNote, I think, is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And that really does show you how good a Metro, or now they're calling it modern, multi-touch app can be, because it uses new controls that are really, really slick. It's well-purposed to what it's designed to do. I would love it. It does allow me to sort of give Microsoft a pass for waiting so long to bring Microsoft Office to multi-touch, because it's clear that they don't want to just port it over. They feel as though they have to reconsider the entire thing to make it work for multi-touch. So if they were able to create a really compelling version of Office where you don't have to print, unlike Keynote, unlike Pages, unlike Numbers, you don't have to transmogrify these files over. You keep this in your Microsoft Cloud storage and it appears and works the same way on this tablet as it did on your desktop. I wouldn't want to say that it would be a game changer, because that's an overused word, and also for anything to challenge the iPad supremacy, a lot would have to happen. But I think that would be, when we look back 5 years from now, if 5 years from now the iPad is just another tablet in the same way that the iPhone is now kind of just another phone, that's going to be one of the things that we talk about as how that managed to happen in such a short period of time.
Why, I don't understand, though, why it has taken Microsoft so long to port some sort of touch interface from Office. I mean, mainly it's Word, isn't it? Let's face facts. It's Word and Excel, but Word, I would say, was the primary one, yeah, sorry.
Two words. Had... Steve Ballmer. Remember, he thought the iPhone was cute. Isn't that adorable? Apple thinks they can make something that makes phone calls. Ha ha ha. He thought the iPad was cute, or the iPod was cute. You know, and like, who would want an iPod when you can have a Zune? Remember? This is the company you're dealing with.
Well, Steve's not going to be there for much longer.
Yeah, why do you think it's happening?
Yeah.
I think it just doesn't come down to anything more complicated than that. He never thought that it was anything they needed to take seriously. And much like the internet, everything sort of routed around him. Microsoft Office turned out to be an issue, so, you know, Apple upped their game with the kind of stuff that you could do using Pages files. Yeah, you can open a Pages file in Word. You can save something in Word and then open it up in Pages on your iPad, and there you go. And then you're done. And I think a lot of people who need to get by are having that be the way that they do it, and that it's working for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that I think Ballmer's, first of all, let's not completely denigrate what he's contributed to Microsoft. He's been there since 1980, and the huge success, and we forget about what a company what kind of company it was in 1980. That said, I think that you're going to see sort of reverse Jobs effect. Whereas now Tim Cook is getting flack by saying, you know, I just don't know that Steve would have done it that way. I think that whoever succeeds Steve Ballmer is going to say, you know, I don't think Ballmer would have done it that way. Thank God we have. Thank God for you. Here, take another big bucket full of money. But in terms of porting Office over, you can compare the desktop version of Pages before the iPad came out with the desktop version of Microsoft Office, and I think that's also a big factor. You can, porting this very simple word processor and page layout program to iOS was not necessarily trivial, but it seems like it was a linear thing. Microsoft Word is designed to do anything from a one-page letter to a 1,000-page, 8-volume report. with mm-hmm. complicated content and dynamic content from spreadsheets. Again, it is the grease for the gears of industry. Absolutely. And so I don't, and it's a really complicated, and that's also why I forgive them a little for having kind of a jacked up interface with all these multiple ribbons. Again, I can't think of a way to simplify Microsoft Word without stripping away the power that makes it the standard word processor for business. So it's I'm really keen to see what that mobile version of that is going to be, because they can't just put everything, they can't just take the entire thing over there. Right. So I think it really is going to have to be a Skunkworks project where go away for, I use this term a lot because I think that it's sometimes the only way to solve a problem of this kind, where go away for 3 months. It's not like we're never going to check in with you, but we have to start with somebody who, a team that does nothing but has nothing but the goal of build mm-hmm. something really, really good. Later on, we will look at it and say, well, it needs to support this, and we have to have it work with this, but we have to start off with a small group of people who's only mm-hmm. focused on making a great office-style word processor.
And I'm sort of hopeful that it's taking this long because they're being thoughtful about it. I really want it to be something that's approached well and not just, not sort of put out there to check a box.
Yeah.
You know, because you do get a lot of alternate versions of things, regardless of what it is. If it's primarily an Apple thing, sometimes the Windows version isn't so hot. If it's primarily an iPhone thing, the Android thing isn't so hot. If it's primarily Android, the iOS version, eh. So, you know, whatever it is, like, you can always tell, like, where the original allegiance is. And so I really hope that what they're doing is something like, Andy probably has, but Carl and Alex, you guys probably haven't, like, hung out with people who work at the Microsoft Mac BU, who are like, we love Apple, and we think Macs are great, and we, you know, our phones are awesome, and this tablet is great. And you really want somebody that believes in that piece of it to really be the people who approach it. And so I really hope they can pull it off. I think it would be interesting to see. I don't think that there are people going, well, if it doesn't run Office, I guess I can't have one. I just don't. I don't see as much of that. But that's only because I worked in my previous life. I was in corporate IT at a not small company, and the iPad adoption rate was a hockey stick there. So I think it's entirely possible. And telling people, well, you just have to change slightly how you save your documents. You have to change slightly how you save your presentations. It wasn't an issue. So I think it's entirely possible they could do this, and it would be awesome. I think it would make the ridiculously high corporate adoption rate even higher. Oh, it runs Office. Okay.
Well, you got to remember.
I just got a horrible feeling. Sorry, Alex, gone.
I was going to say, they've had plenty of time to work this out. I mean, it's not so much the coding they've got to do. It's get the feel of the thing right. They've got to get mm-hmm. the way this thing works. They can get the coding right. They can take as much time as they like over that. It's not the difficult bit. And they've had it on the Metro. They've been able to break it, fix it, play with it. They've more or less know what they're doing now. So now it's just a case of rewriting it. So, I mean, that was always going to be the issue. It was, how do we make this feel like it works on a touchpad of any sort? It doesn't matter what the operating system is. And they've done that bit because they've got their own device to mess around with. And they've obviously been working on it for their own device before their device was ever launched, because their device was always designed to run this piece of software. So, the last bit, the porting it over, is probably the easy bit.
I really hope they're just not dragging their heels, though, in like for it appear on the iPad, because they think that as soon as it does, it's going to put the Def Now into their Surface project. I just hope that's not the case.
But they'll make more money selling it on the iPad than they will making money selling the Surface.
Yeah, because they might sell one.
I don't think so, because remember that Surface is a lot more ambitious than it's a different strategy than what the iPad is. Their idea is that we're gonna have a desktop operating system that works really, really great with multi-touch. We're gonna build a tablet that is absolutely 100% as capable as a desktop PC, but also really, really works well as a tablet computer. Which I don't think is a fool's errand. I think there's a lot of things that Apple could do to the iPad to make it a lot easier to use for people like me who do not want to travel with both this and the notebook computer. And so I think that Surface RT is an oddball device. It's a weird device. I'll be shocked if it's still being sold a year from now. But Surface Pro, that's a really interesting thing. If I had $1,000 or let's compare it to the 13-inch MacBook Air. If I had that's $1,200, I think the base price. If I had $1,200 to spend on that kind of device, and I did not have a specific allegiance to Mac OS, I would be looking. I might be very well looking at Surface Pro as a beautifully made, lightweight tablet device that can run every single piece of desktop software on the planet without limitations, that in tablet mode makes it very, very easy for me to attach devices, to work with files, to work with pretty much whatever I want to work with. And when I've got it set up on that little Formica desk that you get in the hotel room and I need to do 3 or 4 hours worth of writing at work, it understands that perhaps keyboard shortcuts are a good thing to have when you're trying to boldface and highlight things like that. It would be an interesting alternative. The difference between the Surface Pro and an iPad, that's a totally different kettle of fish, because the iPad can add simplicity and elegance that no desktop operating system can do. But once again, when I was going to Seattle to get pre-release look at the new Kindle tablet, and I knew that, and also I was going to have some time with Jeff Bezos, I knew that, well, I'm going to have to do lots of things. After that meeting, I've got 3 hours to put together a really complicated story and file it, and as I'm packing, I'm sort of defaulting to say that, okay, I'm going to take just the iPad with me, because that's what I always do. And then I thought, you have 3.5 hours. You're going to have pictures. You're going to have all this sort of stuff. What are the chances that the iPad is going to screw up the simple act of picture on a memory card, picture that I can work with on the computer? And then that's why I said, okay, let's just take our 13-inch old MacBook Pro, because I really don't think the iPad can do – I'm not trusting the iPad to take a file from a memory card and do that in a simple way that I don't have a chance to screw it up. So that's what I'm saying. I think it's interesting. I think that once Microsoft manages to convince developers to write aggressively for this modern UI – it's going to be an interesting twist to the marketplace, because I just don't think that the consumers have yet explained exactly how they want to interact with tablets yet. I think that they've clearly said that we like 7-inch tablets, we like these as media devices that also can get our email and let us post to Facebook. I don't think they've yet clearly said, when you build a 10-inch tablet, here's what we want that to do and how we're going to use it for. So that's still there's still space for a company like Microsoft to do in really interesting and successful things there.
Well, Fox News has told Microsoft what to do with a 55-inch tablet, haven't they?
Oh, man.
As iBookery reminds me in the chat room there.
Can I take one moment to remind people, Fox News is not America. They've got,
yes,
please, just
you.
Fox News is not America. That's all.
The more
please,
you
please.
Know.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, Fox, there's one show on the Fox News Network where the background are these huge 55-inch screens with little people, well, normal-sized people, but they look tiny in front of these screens, sitting there news gathering. And apparently they're only 1080p screens, really, but 55 inches long. So,
but it's a desk. This is the thing you have to explain to people. It looks like the Lilliputian people from Gulliver's Travels in front of iPads. That's what it looks like.
It looks like after every story they should be singing, getting together and singing the Oompa Loompa song.
Right? It does. It totally
commenting on
does.
News stories.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I've got a Congress reprint for you. Yeah.
Well,
come on.
Going with the music
what
theme.
What do you do when Boner has no cards?
Apparently, a few English-speaking countries are going to get iTunes Radio at last early next year. Now, there was something went wrong the other day in the iTunes ecosphere, and it accidentally leaked out that we had iTunes Radio for a very short amount of time before some blighter switched it off again. Tempting, but I just want to ask, like our American contingent, do you use iTunes Radio? Are you still using iTunes Radio? Because I know it was all the buzzword when it first came out, but have you stuck with it? Is it still useful? And has it increased your purchases?
Not at all. I mean, it. I think it's useful. To see how sophisticated it was. I think the first artist that I plugged into it was actually George Formby. Because I was expecting. Now, are you do know that George Formby is sort of like light, comedic, like music hall sort of stuff, And so within like two songs, it said, oh, I'm guessing he wants like old timey music from the 30s and 40s and 50s. Like, no, that's really not George Formby. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that it doesn't add anything new, because I have Google Music, and it's a much better product because it continues to serve the role of being everything I like about Pandora, everything I like about Spotify, and everything I like about my device's built-in music player. So for me, iTunes Music is just not adding anything new to the party.
Kelly?
I wouldn't say I'm at the opposite end, but I'm a little ways down. I did buy a record, and I bought it because, yes, record, look it up. It was something I had wanted to buy anyway, and I heard it was a Marvin Gaye Greatest Hits compilation. And I bought it because a couple of Marvin Gaye songs showed up on one of the radio stations, and I went, oh yeah, I don't have that, and I totally should. And so it was playing, and I picked it up, and I went, yeah, that's actually the one I was looking at buying. And so I bought it while I was out digging I don't remember, some sort of toil. It involved laying a retaining wall around one side of the house. And so I was like, yeah, this would be a great, like, while I was out there listening to stuff. Normally what I do if I'm out working in the yard and things is listen to Pandora. I was giving iTunes Radio a shot. I have found that it is cool if you are able to get it to, if you can nudge it toward the right thing. I put on Pet Shop Boys Radio, and it thinks all I want to hear is songs from 1984 that have a synthesizer in them, and that's not true.
That's all there ever was in 1984.
Hey, hush at you. but I'm with Andy on the, you must want old-timey music. Like, no, what I want is dance music, like disco-influenced dance music that comes from bands like the Pet Shop Boys, and there's this, and there's that, and there's the other thing, and it wasn't really giving me a whole lot of stuff that was related musically. It was giving me a lot of stuff that was related on paper, and I'm hoping that it will get a little bit more Pandora-ier with that. Also, I know that there are settings, so a lot of people, I think, have gone, the radio thing was boring, so I didn't really use it. But you can set it to, like, there's hits, there's, like, a slider that's got three, it's, like, hits, and I don't remember what the middle one is, there's, like, some discovery, and then, like, all discovery, and you can have it go, like, I only want to play, like, popular 80s music, or I want to play, like, some more interesting stuff, or, like, you know, you can go to, like, crazy deep cuts, or whatever they're calling it, I don't remember, and my phone's over there. But, if you adjust that slider a little bit, sometimes it can make your station more interesting as well.
So. Yeah, because that's what people really want about this feature. They want to be able to have to go through sliders to try to massage the recommendations. I mean, it's not bad. I think that you can compare it to Maps in that it wasn't really good when it started off, but you knew that it was going to get better as more people, real people, started using it. Right now, it's a little bit like that shoe store owned by a huge, huge national chain, where they know that rather than actually give you exactly what you want, if we have three kinds of sneakers, they'll settle for one of these three styles of sneakers. We don't have to do half sizes because, okay, well, if the size 10 doesn't fit, they'll settle for the size 11 because they just want the sneakers to go out. So it's not like Pandora where they want you to go. They really want to impress you with, wow, I was a big Joe Jackson fan, but I had no idea there was this other artist that was so similar to Joe Jackson, in that everything I like about Joe Jackson, I also like about this guy. Now I'm heading over to another store to buy lots of music by this other artist. So it's not there yet. Check back in 6 months and maybe it'll get better.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. If people use it and thumb up and down, then it'll work. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking forward to it when it comes here, hopefully in January or thereabouts, or even earlier maybe. You never know. So here's one. Last proper story is for, I think, Alex. This will be good. Apple's Johnny Ive designs a Leica camera. Not a Leica. I once called it a Leica camera on the photo show, I remember. I got lambasted for it. So Johnny Ive, the industrial designer behind almost every Apple product in the last two decades, has designed a Leica M, which is to be auctioned off on November to benefit the HIV AIDS charity product Red. The normal version retails for about £500. Apparently 561 models and almost 1,000 prototype parts were used to make this one-off camera. Oh, look, and Alex drops out just as I'm about to ask him.
I'm still here. Am I not?
Oh, yeah, fainted.
I think I am.
So have you seen this Johnny Ive camera, Alex?
I have seen the camera. Shame they had to bugger up an M9. It started off as quite a nice camera before he got his hands on it. Now, look, it's a one-off. Someone's going to pay an extraordinary amount of money, and it's all going to go to a good cause, so well done. It looks to me like something you'd have got someone like, Cary Grant or Ingrid Bergman on the beach in Cannes in 1950. It looks like something like that. It's pretty. It's taken all the important bits out, so it'll be useless. I mean, it's got no flash anymore, and it's, you know, you won't be able to use it at night.
No hot shoe, is it?
Yeah, no, it's just taken the whole flash out. Look, you're buying this as a work of art. If you really want a camera, then just, they're only $5,000. This is going to cost you $500,000.
It's
a good, nice
more.
Thing for charity. Well, you know, they buy it back themselves. But, I mean, you look at the... Yeah. Oh, there's one of these, you know. If you could buy the first M9, it would probably cost you about the same. The first one that came off the production line. So the time and effort and parts and everything that's gone into making this one single camera, you do think they probably could have just donated the money that they've wasted building it, and it would have probably come to about the same amount. So it's a shame, but maybe Leica will sell a load of M9s with, maybe he could put his signature on it and add £1,000 to that, and also donate that to every charity or something. But I mean, Andy's a fine photographer. I've witnessed plenty of his work on Bullsnap, so I'm sure he's got a very, very important opinion.
I wish I had $6,000 for a normal Leica camera, let alone one that has like the cheese grater motif on it. But yeah, I mean, I am fascinated by it because I don't collect cameras. If I'm at a flea market and I see like an OM-10, I will buy it for the lens, okay, and it's a kind of interesting decorative object. But I sometimes like look at camera auctions and I'm like, the richest people in the world with the least connection to the work that they do for the money that they earn are people who are collecting cameras, because you see that this camera went for like $630,000, and yes, there are only 11 of them, but it's like, it's an old camera that they, it was a consumer item that was sold for money, and it's in great shape, I know, but it's a device that takes photos, and yeah, okay. Again, if you happen to be a billionaire, and if you really think that this is going to stick it to, like, you know, Gerard, your fellow Leica collector, that you, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, I just don't want Gerard to get this camera. I don't care if I have to spend half the money I have in this world. I will simply have to kill myself if Gerard gets this camera and I don't. If there's one of these Leicas and this person has it, I will simply have to die.
Well, if I get hold of this camera, I want to know if I can use Instagram on it. That's all I want to know.
Yeah. It's unless it has those wacky filters on it.
I think you're missing.
It's just not worth $500,000 unless it takes square pictures and put sepia tone fake all over it.
Go on, Alex.
Yeah. Or you could just take all the guts out of the inside, put a bit of film, and do it properly. No, what this me is missing is Johnny Ive doing that really slow. This is how we built the Leica camera. And he could have done the video before they do it on the auction.
Does it come with the video?
That's it. At some of these, they might suddenly darken.
They could have an SD card inside it with a video on it.
That would be awesome. Johnny in his little white room.
This network wouldn't exist without the continuing support of UK2.net. If you'd like to help this network, then please head on over to our website at britishtechnetwork.com, click the UK2 banner, and explore some of their wonderful services. Web hostings, dedicated servers, domain names, VPNs, and many other services they have at great prices. However, if you want prices that are even better, then head back to our site. Click on the sponsors page, and you will find a number of offer codes to save you even more money. Without the support of UK2.net, we couldn't continue to bring you all the shows on this very network. UK2.net, support them because they support us. Okay, everyone, cool things. Let's start off with Alex.
Okay, right. Two things. First one, Earlier on the week, I had an email from some American company trying to sell me a multi-USB cable, which, you know, it was 50% off and still only $30. And it was just a USB to 30-pin Lightning and mini-USB. And I was thinking, that's a really good idea, but that seems like an awful lot of money. And I tweeted out this because I thought it was a nice idea, and I've been looking around, and I found a USB cable, which is a 30-pin, 8-pin Lightning, mini-USB, and micro-USB, and it's charging only, because let's face it, that's all you need it for £2.88. Now, my theory is, etiquette these days, when you have a visitor, you need to make them tea or coffee, you need to give them at least something to eat, and you must have the facility to charge up their devices. I think that's now a modern etiquette problem. If you don't have the right adapter for your friends, you will lose your friends. So I'm not going to give out this particular one because it's a great big long-winded thing and it probably gets made in China for 50 pence or something, but I think everyone should definitely go out and buy a USB to as many different connectors for people's phones as you possibly can get, otherwise you'll lose all your friends and be as lonely as Carl. Right, that's that one. The one that really matters is the BBC iPlayer app. Okay, this is a UK only, so again, very important. What they've introduced is something called the BBC Playlister. Now, it's a bit like the iTunes radio thing, and what it does, you can do it on the website and the app, and basically any BBC radio service that isn't just broadcast through a normal radio. But what they do, as they're playing, they now put a link on the app and the website of everything on for every song. And if you like it, all you do is click that link, and it saves the information of the song that's playing into your own favourites list, which then gives you the option to email to yourself, tweet, Facebook, or whatever. But you can also, they've got three partners, and I can't remember who they are, I can only remember Spotify at the moment, but you can send that to your Spotify playlist. So from the BBC app, anything you like, you just press the button, send it to Spotify, that's who you've set it up with. It gives you the ability to just listen to it again and again because it's built your playlist, or it gives you the ability to buy them. So I just think it's the future of so much more content now. So if you're listening to your radio, it will come out on digital radios before long. You'll just press a button, it will save that information and send it off to where it needs to be so that it's waiting for you, whether you want to listen to it again on Spotify or go and buy it from wherever it is. I just think it's the future. There's a massive push by the iPlayer video and radio. They've got some amazing ideas coming in the future. I was reading about them, and that's a media show thing, so I'll save that for the media show. But this is the first part of a brand new system that is absolutely mind-blowing. And anyone that thinks the iPlayer or the iPlayer radio is good now, you wait a year, you'll... We will not believe what's coming. I will announce as much as I can get my hands on the media show on Sunday.
The only thing I'll add is...
go and get the iPlayer radio app. It's been updated.
The only thing I'll add is the charging things. With iOS 7, it seems to be really picky now about what Lightning cable you use with it. And it's much more prevalent now to say, I can't use this. This isn't legit. So you've got to watch out for that on certain charging cables now, unfortunately.
Specifically, Andy. Lightning is the one that's the fiddliest. That's all.
Andy, what have you got for us?
Two things. One is the new iOS 7 version of Omni Outliner for iPad, which is hopefully the vanguard of a whole new series of productivity apps for iPad. One of the many tiny little things that makes iOS 7 so great is that Apple has finally allowed developers to have access to the keyboard in a meaningful way. There's a reason why Pages was the only word processor out there that would let you do italics and boldface without having to like take your hands off the keyboard and tap through a menu to do it. That's because the Xcode was not giving developers awareness of command keys and stuff like that. Now, it's not as ambitious as it could be, but they at least allow the developers to say, here's what should happen every time someone hits command whatever. So it's good stuff. So for an app like Omni Outliner, which I use almost every day as a way of taking just raw thoughts inside my head and putting it in some sort of a tangible format, or during a meeting or a briefing, taking notes or just trying to get data, raw data, that doesn't belong in a spreadsheet yet, doesn't belong in a database yet, but putting it out there makes it very, very easy to simply type. No, I want this to be underneath a subhead of this, then a subhead of that, then go back up one, go back down one, go back up again, promote this, demote this, tab, whatever. It was a nightmare to use on iPad because every time you wanted to do these sort of instinctive things, because, again, you have an idea, and then you think you're going to go to the next idea, but, oh, wait a minute, I want to add some more details to that. Again, let's create subheads to that. Now, instead of just simply lining up the flow of with iOS 6, you'd have to interrupt that every time to take your hands off the keyboard, tap this, move this. With this one, it's just all keyboard commands. And it is, if there are more, I hope this is again the first of many apps we're going to see for the iPad that allow you to have that kind of power, because Apple is sort of, sometimes Apple is kind of full of it, because when they try to complain about like a Windows strategy of having touchscreen enabled notebooks, they'll say, you know, nobody wants the monkey arm effect. That's just stupid. That's terrible design. Like, yeah, but guys, you're making me do that all the time on the iPad, and you're charging me $500. Actually, for my iPad, like I got the 64 gig with LTE, so you charged me $860 for a machine that can't do boldface with Command B. Maybe ease up on the comments about Windows a little bit. So that's item number one. Second thing is, I mentioned in passing earlier today, the Kindle Fire HDX 7-inch tablet, which is, if I have to say that, in my opinion, I think that this is the tablet that most people want when they shop for a 7-inch tablet, which is not to say that you're silly for buying anything else, but if someone asks me what 7-inch tablet should I buy, and no, I will not respond to any question you ask about what do you intend to use it for, what kind of user are you, I think that the Fire HDX is likely to be the one that will make them the happiest, for two reasons. Three reasons. It inherits everything that was good about the previous Fires, which the Kindle puts content at the center of the entire experience. You turn it on, and it doesn't show you a grid of application icons. It shows you a carousel of all the content that you've been playing with. So the last book you read, followed by the book you read before that, followed by the album you're listening to, followed by it's a history of the things that you were experiencing on this one device. So you don't have to think about, well, it was a movie, but what app did I use to launch that with? I think that's a silly thing about the iPad that Apple really needs to fix. Reason number two is that they have fixed pretty much everything that we could complain about previous editions. It was kind of laggy. There was not that sort of rough. Instinctive. Yeah. The first version was you forgave it only because, hey, here's a tablet that costs $250 instead of $500, and it's portable, but clearly they have ways to go. They improved it last year. This year they really solved it, both with a Snapdragon 800 processor and also totally revamping their entire graphics pipeline, and also having Android 4.2, so you have essentially three mm-hmm. companies working together to reduce that problem, and they've pretty much eliminated it. But the main reason is that X-ray on video and music is just awesome. X-ray is the feature they put into all of their Kindles so that if you're reading like a 8-book, 1,000 pages per book fantasy series and said, wait a minute, that's Thagdar the table stalker. I thought you were dead. Thundar the table? Who are you? With X-ray, the information about these characters and the structure of the story is wired into the book itself. So you can actually tap on that. It will open up a little page without having to go to the internet to show you, well, here is who this character is. Mm-hmm. Here are all the, and if you want to, it'll give you a timeline. It'll show you, here are all the places in the book where he actually appears. So if you want to re-familiarize yourself. They've expanded that for movies and TV shows, too, where you'll be watching, for instance, I'm watching a musical, 1776. And there's a character that looks like Phil Hartman, and he sounds like Phil Hartman. And so this is maybe a point at which I will, like, as I'm watching, I'll, like, open up, like, I'll switch the IMDb and search for the cast list to find out who he is. With X-ray for video on the Kindle Fire, you simply touch a button, and it will actually pop up and overlay a list of thumbnails of here are all the characters who are in this scene right now, the names of each character and the actor who's playing him. And if I want to find, oh no, that's not Phil Hartman, that's another actor, but I wonder what other movies he's been in, I can tap on that. It will, I think it actually pauses the video, but then will not open IMDb, but open up a nice little like page that says, here are other movies he's been in. If they're singing a song, oh, here's the name of the song. if you
buy it.
If you want to, exactly, and that's fair play too. And so it is, and if you've got an Xbox or a limited number of supported hardware, you can also use it as a second screen where you can just simply like throw it onto like your big HD TV, and then the TV will take over the streaming completely, and the Kindle screen will only be used for the supplemental content.
Oh my god, my dad might need one of these.
Exactly, that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, people who want a content-based device are really going to love this, and it's possible for this to be a distraction. I appreciate and understand that. But the fact is that when I'm watching the Turner Classic Movies channel, I'm doing this sort of stuff all the time where I want more information. It doesn't really distract me from it. It enhances my understanding and my like of this thing. And so, and for all that, it's still a really inexpensive but really, really well-made tablet that also runs productivity apps, but it's really aimed towards people who want a content consumption device, which I think is pretty much on target for most of the people who want a pocketable tablet these days. So those are my two picks.
Do you remember when we used to watch a movie and someone would appear and we'd have to sit there thinking, I know that person.
Yeah.
Who are they? Where were they?
And it's so cool to watch. It really is almost like watching a video game because it's so fine grained. You know, a coach pulls up. There are two characters who are talking and there are two little thumbnails. And then a coach pulls up containing two people and now two more thumbnails appear. Wow. And then they drive off again after their dialogue. Then two thumbnails disappear. And we're like, my goodness, whose job is it to like encode this information inside the movie? It is off the hook.
The intern.
Exactly. Wow.
I suppose it's the same as the guy that has to do the subtitles.
Yeah. One last thing that's also cool. It will also hook into IMDb's like trivia feed, so you can sort of get pop-up video. So if you're kind of bored with an exposition scene, it will say, notice that the red drum in the background was also in the scene at the very beginning of the movie 10 years earlier, 3,000 miles away. The set director just happened to still have it, so he just threw that in the scene.
Nice.
Anyway, it's like now you just want to like go through the demo and then like simply as the moderator turns, say, Apple, show us what the iPad can do when watching we're playing a movie. Wonderful.
Oh my god.
Oh wait, you don't even have a Retina display. Okay, whatever.
Andy, they need
to charge $100 more. Okay.
They need to sign you up as their salesperson, I tell you.
When I'm enthusiastic about something, it's like you see this on my face. I love really cool things that are very that seem to have been like, oh, well, this is how Andy Anatko watches a movie, so we should make a device that optimizes itself so it lets him do that really, really easily.
Wow. Kelly, what have you got for
what you need?
I'm still back at my dad has a Kindle keyboard.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, Alex just wants to
say. No, go ahead, Alex.
No, I'm miles out, aren't I? No, I was going to say, what you need that device to do, you need to do it so you send the video to the big TV in the room and everyone's watching it, but you're the only one that gets the information. So you sit there and you just nonchalantly say, that person, oh, did you see that bin? Now, this is just completely blow people away, and they've got no idea that you're being fed the information.
You know what? I saw floating weeds, and Ozu's cinematographer used to favor that angle exactly. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the person who worked on this... Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, it was the same cinematographer. I know I went for the... It was like the push-and-fade sort of technique.
Kelly,
I'm still back at the Kindle that my dad might get for Christmas. Because seriously, he's got a Kindle keyboard now, so if he could do this and it hooks up to the TV, like, he might be all over that. I have two picks this week. My first pick, you guys probably already know, 1Password 4. It's out for Mac. My job has gotten 0% less ridiculous as a result, because it's only been a week. It's still a little crazed over at the day job, but it's awesome. It's super useful. It's really pretty. It's really pretty. So yeah, you should check it out. It's pretty awesome. My other pick is a local pick. It's from a company here in town, and we don't have fancy pants video effects, so I'm just gonna do this the low tech way and hold my iPad up to my camera. It's a dock from a company called Grove here in Portland. And here's the reason that it's cool. I will scroll down and find the spot where it shows that what you do with it. So it's half metal. It's got a metal aluminum base.
and then they put the bamboo over top of it. And the reason that it's cool that it comes apart is because you feed the cable through it up through the bottom. That's the picture of the bottom of the dock. So you feed whatever cable you want up through the bottom of that. So if you're, say you're Mr. Kelly right now, and you have an iPhone 4S, and at some point you're going to upgrade your device, if you have a 4S right now, you feed your 30-pin cable up through that, and you have a dock. And then when you get your 5 and you have to switch to a lightning cable, you get your lightning cable, and you feed your lightning cable up through it, and then you have a dock. And it solves the issue that a lot of docks have, which is they are a 30-pin dock, and now my phone isn't anymore. This dock is useless. So if you have a device that is the right width to fit, it's a pretty generous opening at the top to put your phone into. If you have a device that fits, you could feed a micro USB cable through it as well. It's super solidly made, and they do them right here in town. I've been to the place. It's pretty fantastic. And here it is apart, so you can see how it looks. You just, like I said, you just slide the bamboo piece over the aluminum base. It's pretty fantastic. I like it a lot. everything they make is amazing. I'm a super, super, super Grove fangirl. All their stuff is awesome and solid and really well made. And I have their iPad felt and wool felt and bamboo sleeve. It's beautiful. They make all kinds of other stuff. They have iPhone cases and all kinds of neat things, but it's grovemade.com. And, like I said, it's beautiful. It's out right now and you can feed it whatever cable you want. So if you're still somebody on a 4 waiting to go to a 5, it's a pretty awesome device. And it does secure the cable. It holds it in there so that you can put your phone in and it won't wiggle around. And the other important thing is that if you have a case, you can also use this dock. So it's slightly more useful than the five dock from Apple. So that's my pick.
That's what we like. We like our cases. We like our docks to fit our cases, or our cases to fit our docks.
Yes. It's amusing, Andy. I know that. So I must have done it right.
My one, after all those fantastic picks, my one's just a simple game. It's just F1 Challenge from Codemasters. And it's a Formula Racing, racing game. And it's got very simple controls. First of all, your car whizzes around the track from a bird's eye view. You control the steering with your thumb on one side of the screen, and then you just press the other side of the screen as a sort of turbo boost every now and again. You just have a series of challenges that you have to complete, and then you obviously earn stars, because that's the way all games go now. You have to earn stars. Damn you, Angry Birds. And as you earn more stars, that unlocks more levels, and you can go up. But it's a good fun game, and it's £1.99, and it's a universal app, so that's always a bonus when you can play it on both devices. And it's good.
At the same time,
indeed. Right, so what's left is, where can we get hold of everyone? So, Alex, you're up first.
I'm going to say Alex G. Fox on Twitter, and you'll hear this when I've already left the room.
There is a weird delay for you today. Very strange. Andy, where can we get hold of you?
If you can spell my last name, I'm Anatko on Twitter. You can also go to anatko.com for my blog and links to my Flickr and other sort of places. Or you can check out my columns at the Chicago Sun-Times, suntimes.com, and Grid Chicago, which is their... They own lots of sites, and I write for the Sun-Times, and then they get the right to put them wherever they want. And so some of them wind up on the Sun-Times site, some of them wind up on their business site. So, but again, if you go to anatko.com or in my Twitter feed, you'll see links to wherever you can find this sort of stuff.
And the Anatko Almanac as well, of course.
Yes, thank you.
Good. Kelly, where can we get hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. You can also find me on the Angry Mac Bastards podcast and over on the Tuwa Talkcast, and I occasionally write stuff at tuaw.com.
Excellent. My name's Carl Madden. You get hold of me on Twitter at claw0101, or also maybe towards the end of next week, my Mac blog thing will finally go live, and that's at macandforth.com. We never know. Hopefully Ewan will be back next week, so you'll be spared me. Always a bonus. So until then, everyone, stay safe, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Don't be